all about the best of life in Harrogate. This is the Your Harrogate Podcast.
Hiya, my name is Pete Edgerton on Your Harrogate Radio every single weekday between 10 and 2. And welcome to another Your Harrogate Podcast at the foot of a half-term week where we're doing lots of half-price deals. Click vouchers at yourharrogate.co.uk to experience our half-price, half-term food and drink out, days out as well. Don't pay full price, pay half price with our vouchers. Have a look at the website for more. Now, coming up, we're going to be speaking to a man who is based in Harrogate and is raising funds for a cause which is incredibly close to my heart and for over 500,000 people across the UK too. But first of all, to football of local interest, Harrogate Town are back at home at the Envirovent Stadium this weekend against Colchester United in League Two. And here comes their award-winning manager, Simon Weaver. Simon, first of all, congratulations from me. Congratulations from us all at Your Harrogate. How does it feel to be named January Sky Bet Manager of the Month?
First of all, thank you very much. It feels good, but it's just one moment in time of many moments in the season. And I've got to appreciate all the hard work from the players and staff in that period and the period running up to that, you know, where everyone fought hard for points and then confidence has risen and we produce better performances and results.
Please reassure me that the curse of Manager of the Month that people have talking about in the past, that's long gone, isn't it? The curse doesn't exist.
Well, I hope not. There's been mentioned about it. Even our Secretary Mary said, I mustn't even touch the small trophy I've been given, which is well actually to avoid last night because I actually left it in the office and I grabbed my bags and forgot about it.
But oh no!
I'll have to touch it at some point because I want to show my kids.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, of course you do.
At least to do that. But now I think a lot's made of we're all superstitious to a certain extent. But I just take it home, and after that, I think I'll leave it alone. Yeah.
Fair play. Now on to playing matters. Great point last week at League Leaders Stockport. Was it as tough as you expected it to be, or even more so?
I think it was just what we expected. In terms of we had to defend for some solid periods of the game, but we remained astute with the defending and resistant. I was very proud of the performance. We knew that their crowd was another man for their team, you know, and can affect decisions, can affect the morale for and against the home team. So we tried to turn their energies against the home team, which we didn't quite manage that because they're top of the league and for good reason. And right, so their fans stuck with them. But what we did was we made them a little bit quieter because of the start of each half. We were on top and had good possession and created some good chances. So overall, it was a stern test, but one that I thought the lads passed by being composed throughout, and I was very proud.
Now, since you and I last spoke for Your Harrogate, a few changes in the January transfer window. Kane Ramsey has gone, but by all accounts, satisfied at the fee that you actually achieved from him going?
Yes, yeah. I think it was a good deal in the end for all parties. We didn't just want to give away a prized asset. Having said that, we didn't want to deny a lad an opportunity I think he warrants. You know, he's a London boy. He does miss his mum, and that's a nice quality that he has got. But he didn't want to go to another League Two outfit, and he didn't want to go just for a bigger wage. You know, he wanted to go ideally to a London club that is a big club, and he's done that. Charlton, without doubt, you can't be denied. They are a big club, probably ready to set fire again, and a new management. And we felt that the offer was good enough in the end. And it took a while to negotiate. And that's why sometimes the last minute deals on transfer deadline day, because, you know, we hold out for a good fee for the club. And I think the staff and the club deserve that.
A couple of lads have come in. Derek Abu, who featured for you against Stockport last week, and Tom Bloxham as well from Blackburn. What can you tell us about those two players?
Well, Derek has already shown a lot of his qualities away at Stockport, so we threw him straight in as a direct replacement to Kane Ramsey. But we've watched him play for Southampton. You know, he came up through Chelsea's ranks and then Southampton, so it's very similar profile to Kane Ramsey. Very good in an attacking sense, good build, athletic, can go up and down the right flank, which is what we need, the outlets on the right. he's very calm also defensively. So he's not inclined to really just jump into challenges. He wants to stand up and defend with really good maturity for his age. And then Tom, Lloyd's been out to watch Blackburn under-23s numerous times, and he's a player that stood out as he scored against us in the cup earlier on in the season. And we're looking forward to seeing them both and how he does it.
Just before we have a chat about this weekend's match, something that's making headlines at the moment, and you may have seen this, the talk of trialling a sin bin in football and blue cards, which, as a fan, I don't know, it seems as if it could get quite confusing. How do you feel about it all?
Well, I don't know, really. I have to hear the full extent of the rules of it. I think the game doesn't need complicating. I think you see at the elite level when you've got VAR involved now, and it sort of numbs the emotion, pure emotion of goal scoring, because people are checking and checking and have they scored or not. And so the reaction isn't quite as impulsive when people score at the top end. And it's mostly the talking point as well after games, which is a shame. I think introducing a sin bin might work if it basically cuts out hysterical behaviour. I mean that as a negative, you know, on the pitch. People rolling around, people being showing histrionics in order to trick the referee into making a decision. I think the rules as it stands and the streetwise nature of the game in order to get a win, score a goal, anything for your advantage, I think has overtaken the efforts of the referee. So it's made it who cheats best in some cases throughout the leagues and gets the points in the games where it's won on fine margins. If a sin bin negates that threat and means less paperwork after games and headaches for the officials, then great, because we should be able to recognise now poor behaviour on a pitch. If it stamps it out, then great, but if not, and it's just further complication that's not understood easily on or off the pitch, then also that needs looking at.
Now, real good opportunity for your team on the pitch this weekend to get into the playoffs, so close at the moment. I know you stress time and time again, there is no easy match. No matter where a team is positioned in the table, there's no easy game in League Two. Colchester are the visitors. So what kind of match are you expecting?
I'm anticipating a really tough game. Dave Cowley and his brother have taken over. They've got a fantastic track record in League Two. We know that Seb Peters we'll have to be astute and really on it, concentration-wise, and we'll have to know when to be tough and stand toe-to-toe with them. We also need to play the game much on our terms as possible, so it's not a basketball game. All games are tough at this level, and this will be no different.
Well, good luck, and enjoy celebrating that award with Sally and the kids as well this weekend.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
This is the Your Harrogate podcast.
Have a good one if you're off to the town match, and very best wishes to all our local sides in action too. Now, in this podcast that we put out at the end of the week and into the weekend, we always like it to have an active feel. So we feature Harrogate Town, and then we speak to another local sports group or individuals involved in challenges, like the man who is on the way. 7 ultramarathons in 7 days. That is no mean feat for anybody, let alone somebody who battles chronic inflammation and has been operated on as a result. When I was sent an email and told that this guy was raising funds for Crohn's and Colitis UK, it caught my eye because I support them. I myself have ulcerative colitis. It's a form of inflammatory bowel disease, which in simple terms, when you Google it, it will tell you that it's characterized, Crohn's and colitis, both by chronic inflammation of the gastrointestinal tract. And when it flares, it's not nice. You need to be near a toilet quite frequently, and people manage it with medication or try to, and in severe cases, people have to be operated on. And that leads us into conversation with Kevin Easley, the general manager at Bannatyne Health Club and Spa at Leeds Cardigan Fields. 7 ultramarathons in 7 days. Has Kevin ever done anything like this before?
Not to this sort of scale in terms of so intensely. I've done long runs before. I've done sort of different long distance challenges, and I quite like that sort of challenge that it brings. But for me, no, I've never tried to do sort of 7 ultramarathons in 7 days.
Let's chat about the cause, because before we started recording, you and I have been speaking that it's a cause that's close to my heart, certainly, because I've got first-hand experience of the condition. IBD overall, inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's and ulcerative colitis are the two main types. And you had the latter, didn't you, quite some time ago?
Yeah, so it was about 20 years ago I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. And yeah, about 29 years old, really sort of bit of a shock. Had some chronic pain, found that very difficult to cope with. I think like most do, you have sort of flare-ups, and it was discussed with my GP as to what that may be. It kind of got to the point for me where sort of, I don't know, that pain became very chronic. I admitted myself into hospital, and 2 weeks later I was having a conversation with the GP saying, well, there is no way forward on this, and the only way of resolving this for you is to remove the colon and have a stoma fitted. So, yeah, ulcerative colitis for me was quite a tough thing. But, yeah, obviously it's something you have to try to deal with.
So, in your case, you weren't put on any medication because, for me, they try and manage my particular ulcerative colitis with meds. Doesn't always work, and it's a condition that's forever changing. So yours, by the sound of it, was very, very quick in progressing to that stage of operation.
Absolutely, and I think the initial stage was trying to treat it with medication. And I think at the initial point, that was not too bad. The medication would work. And I think what naturally happened with myself is the medication really didn't work. And I think on that basis, there was nothing that could be done. And I think that's the point that I kind of really understand about this. It is treatable, it is manageable, but there is no cure. There's no sort of medicine you can take which suddenly takes this away from people.
I mean, there's obviously the physical side of it that you have to overcome. But how did it affect you mentally at the time?
I think mentally was a real shock. And I think what you do initially to turn to family and friends, and they're your absolute support line. And I think what you're trying to do is figure out a path on how you go forward and what that looks like. For me, 29 years of age, I was physically fit, very active, played sports, did lots of different activities. And suddenly you feel that's not possible anymore. And I think when you read about things, you talk to family, friends, you speak to GPs, and I think you slowly start to build a path forward. And as the weeks go by, the months go by, you figure out a way through it.
And, I mean, where are you at now? Do you have any symptoms at all, or is it sorted it out, having that stoma fitted?
Yeah, so I think the initial point is the stoma fitted has really kind of, what I say, is given me my life back. That you really got to a point of where I was in chronic pain in hospital, and having a stoma fitted, all of a sudden that chronic pain has disappeared. I think it's a different challenge then that you're faced with of living with a stoma every day of your life and how you cope with that aspect of it. But yes, I get regular checks on the small bit of bowel that's still left. And I get checks on that every sort of few years. I think it's about every 5 years now. Well, that's just monitored. But I've had no issues with that. But yeah, I think what I've learned over the years is it doesn't stop me doing the things that I really want to do. I just have to be more conscious of, I don't know, the nutrition. I have to be more conscious of the amount of fluid that I take in, certainly when I do sort of long-distance activities. But yeah, it poses its different challenges, I think.
That's somewhere where I often question myself, am I being strict enough when it comes to diet and trialing new things? And I'm sure you'll concur with this, but when you're in a situation that your body is under a lot of stress and strain, and you've got the pain and you're rushing to the toilet, you've not got time to trial new diets. Have you found a certain one now that you stick to and you are very strict with yourself, or do you allow yourself a few treats along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sort of conscious of my diet. It's more for me the awareness of what my body digests, what can have a problem with regard to sort of blockages and those things that can occur. So I think I need to be very aware of what foods I eat in that respect. But doing the ones that I do, I need to make sure that I'm eating correctly. So I guess that drives my diet initially. But no, I don't have a strict diet where I have to kind of make significant changes to what I do. It's, like I say, there's certain foods that I do avoid that I know are not necessarily going to be the best food for me.
And we speak to a lot of people who do certain challenges when it comes to fitness and really put their bodies under pressure. Have you found that doing the exercise, and I mean, this takes it to a whole new level, but doing that regular exercise, has that helped?
I think it does. I think it helps for the general well-being. I think at times I have to be very aware of the sort of stress that can be placed around the stomach line. I am very conscious of the things that I do. I only do specific types of strength work. I don't do anything too excessive. But yeah, I wouldn't say that it kind of affects me too much in terms of the exercise. I do naturally have an aback visit. It will fill up over a period of time. And I think as it starts to fill, that's where the, whether you call it an inconvenience or something you have to be more conscious of, I just have that to deal with.
This is the Your Harrogate podcast.
Now on to the challenge. 7 ultra marathons in 7 days. That is some feat. For anybody who hasn't come across an ultra marathon before, what is classed as an ultra marathon, Kevin?
An ultra marathon is typically deemed as being anything over a marathon. So a marathon being 26.2 miles, you're looking at ultra marathon as typically being anything over that. Now, people will look at ultra marathons and say they need to be 50 miles, they need to be 70K, they need to be 100K, they need to be 200 miles. These events kind of go on around the world, which are very, very extreme. But typically, by definition, an ultra marathon is anything over 26.2 miles.
I'd be doing 26.3 miles and going, yep, there you go, done an ultra marathon. You start it on Mothering Sunday on the 10th of March. So have you got family coming along, because you start from Bannatyne in Leeds, don't you, where you work?
Yeah, so I'm based in Harrogate, and I work in Leeds. So I'll be doing my first run from Bannatyne Leeds and doing the loop from there. And yes, it was highlighted fairly recently that it was a bit of an oversight from my part that, yeah, Mothering Sunday was on the day that I'd started.
It's a nice thing to do for mums to come out and get a bit of fresh air on Mothering Sunday and cheer you on, and for an excellent cause as well. So, I mean, that week from the 10th of March, you will be taking in, because you do parts around Fewston, don't you, and Otley, and you do Harrogate. It takes you all over by the looks of it.
Yes, absolutely. So rather than just sticking to the local trails that I run and doing that repeatedly for 7 days, it's trying to sort of get out and about into different areas. So the first one I'll do from Leeds, I'll then do a local one on the Monday. I'm going off to Swinsby and Fewston and Thrushcross reservoirs on the Tuesday, out to Ilkley Moor and Otley Shedding on the Wednesday. I'm doing the Harrogate Ringway, the extended part of that, on the Thursday, and then hopefully heading up to Malham and doing a section of the Pennine Way on the Friday, and then finishing up on the Saturday over at the Bannatyne Club in York.
And then having a well-deserved rest after all of that.
Absolutely. Probably a couple of beers on the Saturday afternoon.
You do right, definitely. And is it for the charity Crohn's and Colitis UK, or is it another angle to IBD?
No, it's Crohn's and Colitis UK is the cause I'm doing it for. So it's purely focused towards gaining the awareness of that charity as much as possible, and obviously raising funds along the way.
And keep talking about it as well, because we said before we got going, before we started recording this little chat, that I get it, the toilet habits, it's a taboo subject for a lot of people, but for people like yourself, like me, and many, many more, and it's an increasing problem as well, isn't it? Crohn's and colitis and other digestive issues, and people shouldn't be embarrassed to put their hand up and say, look, this is me, this is where I'm at, and I'm struggling, and let's talk about it, because just having that chat can ease the mental burden to start with.
Absolutely. I think with all topics like this, people can become very isolated. It isn't something, as you say, it's not a topic that people too often have an open conversation about. But I think if we can gain the awareness and gain that kind of exposure over the charity, that there is support, there is an opportunity of of sort of understanding more about this topic. And like I say, for me, I guess it's an opportunity of sort of trying to show that it doesn't stop what you want to do, that you don't have to do silly events like seven ultra marathons, but just by simply looking at it and thinking, it doesn't stop you being active, it doesn't stop you going out and enjoying things you want to do. It's not restrictive in that way. I think we just have to be more sort of mindful of the situation that we're in. The more that this can be spoken about and the more exposure that can be given, I think can only be a really good thing.
Absolutely. Well, the charity always talks about IBD warriors, and you are certainly one of those. So if people would like to help and contribute, have you got a Just Giving page or another page that people can go to and donate?
Yeah, so there's a Just Giving page that'd be available. And yeah, I will put that onto my Instagram that people will be able to find, and I can share that. I can obviously share that with yourselves. But yeah, the Just Giving page will be available for people to donate, and obviously, see the story that's coming out around this.
Brilliant. Well, good luck with the rest of the training. And it'd be nice to catch up with you once you've had that rest, once you've had those couple of beers, to congratulate yourself and just find out how it all went.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. You're Harrogate.